Thanks for listening to the Best of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weeknight from 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. Eastern, 7 to 11 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every night on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon on Fox Sports Radio.
The Seahawks close with a great defensive play. I know. A great defensive play and a defensive stand. Carlos Dunlap sacks Kyler Murray on 4th and 10. And the Seahawks beat the Cardinals 28-21. The first play a Seahawks defender has made all season long. That's the first tackle made by a Seahawks player since week 3, Mike Harmon.
It was amazing. Right from pillar to post, you actually had plays by the Seattle defense. This was a as Jay Glazer said, you got an injured secondary. Didn't matter. Guys stepping up, Dunlap on the rush, pinching off the edges and saying, all right, Kyler Murray, you want to stand tall in the pocket? Go ahead and try to beat us. Just shock and awe of what we just witnessed here on Thursday Night Football.
I'll tell you, we thought we would get more of an offensive fireworks from these teams. We still got a good game. We still got a close game. And
sure.
Clearly, the story of the game is coming. You say, okay, it's Kyler Murray and the excitement, and we're going to get more Hail Mary madness. And DeAndre Hopkins has been the talk of football all week long. Here are the Seahawks with problems, but Russell Wilson trying to get his MVP candidacy back on track. All of these things. And the story of the game turns out to be the Seahawks defense. One of the worst defenses to this point in the history of the NFL. This is not hyperbole. They are on track and keeping pace with some of the worst defenses in the history
yes.
of the league. They cannot stop anybody throwing the football. They cannot stop anybody. They're doing a better job stopping the run, but any team can throw on them, right? We've talked about this. Every single team. You look at what the passing yards are for guys. I mean, it's insane. Guys are throwing for 300-400 yards a week on the Seattle Seahawks. They are historically bad in the pass department. And tonight, they do it pretty well. Or they do it well enough. Now, it wasn't a great night. I'm not saying, you know, this wasn't a 38-7 game, and this wasn't Kyler Murray being held to 100 yards passing, and Arizona had 10 yards rushing. Arizona still, Kyler Murray goes for 257, a couple of touchdowns. They don't run the ball really well, but then again, that's not what the Cardinals do. But they keep Kyler Murray from getting outside and doing damage like he likes to do, and they only run for about 60 yards. All right, this is not suddenly that the Seattle defense was great, right? Look at this. They turned into a great unit. Jamal Adams made one big play near the line of scrimmage. He also looked completely out of sorts on some plays defensively. But what did it for the Seahawks? It's what we told you about a month ago, all right? No one is riding to the rescue for the Seahawks defense, right? It's not something they're waiting for somebody. Can they continue to get a little bit better and scheme it up a bit? Sure, you see teams scheme up when, all right, this is really not working. We need to just do whatever we can and put Band-Aids over things because, you know, we're past the trade deadline. We're past guys getting back, getting healthy. We're just not a good team defensively. The number one thing, and we said it, Mike, we said it for a long time, which is you're going to hear this on shows tomorrow, so congratulations early, even though we've been talking about it for a month. The biggest thing that's going to help the Seahawks is when they can run the football again. When they can be a team that can control the clock a little bit more than they do, and they can run the football, because that's going to keep the defense off the field. They're not going to have to rely on them to make stop after stop after stop, because the Seattle offense has really been, what can Russell Wilson find? And with all the injured Seahawks running backs, it's been difficult, right? We thought they solved their problem after last year. Oh, their guys got hurt. They were just streaming towards the Super Bowl, and then their running backs got hurt, and what are you going to do? Well, now we're gonna solve that. We got our guys coming back. They're going to be fresh. Penny's going to be in. Chris Carson's going to be good. We're signing Carlos Hyde. We are not going to be caught without running back. What's happened? Penny hasn't made it back. Chris Carson's hurt every week. And now finally, you got a healthy Carlos Hyde again. And he was the difference tonight. He runs for 80 yards and a touchdown. And Seattle runs for 165 yards overall. This is what helped their defense and what helped them win the game. right? That's exactly what it was. You had a, you had Carlos Hyde rushing for 79 yards, and outside of Russell Wilson, it's been a long time since you saw somebody get to 79 yards in one game for the Seahawks. When they were winning and winning big early in the season, it was still Carson was running for 80 yards. That's it. They don't have to have guys running for 150, 160, but you need to be able to have that rushing attack, and they didn't have it. Now they finally got it for the first time in the past month or so, and now it is working again. And instead of being and now in their run where they're 2-5 in the past, or 2-4 in the past few weeks, now that they get their running game going again, this is where they got the W's going, because there's no secret to this. Okay, when Chris Carson got hurt, Russell Wilson was their leading rusher against Minnesota and Arizona. Right, they split those games.
Sure.
All right, you had Larry Dallas, leading
My
rusher
guy.
For the team. Your yeah. guy from Three's Company. You had DJ Dallas running for 41 and 31 yards, and Wilson was the high rusher again against the Rams with 60. Those were two losses and one win. Now you got Carlos Hyde back, 79 yards rushing, and it's a big win for them, and they're able to play pretty well on defense and keep the score down. I mean, that's going to be their formula. If they can run the football, I feel great about them, because, you know, I picked them to go to the Super Bowl before the season started. I mean, not many people know that, but I picked them to go to play the Steelers, who are undefeated, oh, by the way, because I picked the Steelers, too. I want to make sure people know that. And so now I feel better that maybe this is something, as long as their running game gets healthy, I feel confident in them. But, I mean, really, this has been the Seahawks team that I hope to see, and not just a team that shows up every week where, hey, we can win 48-47, we can lose 48-47.
Yeah, I mean, a couple of things. Number one, the addition of Dunlap, as we talked about, whether reputation and fit, scheme, culture, right? You change teams. Winning helps to put some of the ills away, right? Good work, a good day at work helps make the night a little easier, right? Maybe you're frustrated about some things. You find a win, a nice meal, you know, a nice pint of ice cream, maybe, whatever it is, and it makes things a bit better. For Carlos Dunlap, maybe it's just, hey, change of venue. Different guys, mm-hmm. different cats, lime green uniforms, my second game in, all of those things. It's a beautiful thought. But, yes, getting some health at the running back position, huge, absolutely huge for Seattle. We've seen it in the past where they ran 2-3 running backs, and it works. And, obviously, we had the Marshawn Lynch era. But, otherwise, they've run effectively with multiple players. Go back to what the Patriots and Eagles and many others have done towards championship runs. It's not one guy. It's the veritable Swiss Army knife of things. Arizona, right now, would you believe this? Coming into tonight's game, Jason, they were averaging nearly 170 rushing yards per game between what Kyler Murray was able to give and the mm-hmm. the backfield of Love and Hate, the Drake, depending on the week, but also Chase Edmonds getting after it some. You saw him catch the wide-open touchdown pass tonight, and Seattle was able to shut that down, right, and do a good job against that Arizona offensive line and really take away a lot of what they wanted to do. So this was a game that if you're a Seattle fan or if you pick them to go to the Super Bowl, you're at the edge of your chair going, all right, here we go. Six-game spread to the playoff. This is a team I can get behind. This is a team that I think could make some noise and separate within the division so long as the receivers played healthy and stay healthy. And we got to also look at that offense tonight, because there were points left on the table too. So, you know, they win by a touchdown. They cover the number and make those folks happy, their backers, but also there's still room to, you know, dot the I's, cross the T's, and even have a better, more well-rounded effort. So just the beginning. Oh, and I would be remiss if I didn't say your guy, Jamal Adams, also had one of the big plays of the night. So you want to see if you can get unblocked by @Prez.
Oh no, he's not going to unblock me. He doesn't like the fact that I criticized him by you know, just describing the kind of player he is. I'll make plays at the line of scrimmage, but he gets lost in pass defense, and he's going to complain, and things are going to get bad at some point, because, you know, he likes to hide behind the whole I'm just an emotional player, and that should excuse his behavior. Trust me, Trust me, it's going to happen. It's already started to happen with him yelling at Pete Carroll on the sideline because in pass defense, he's not nearly the guy they thought he was going to be. I'm telling you, he's a guy that makes great plays at the line of scrimmage in the backfield. Where did he make his big play tonight, Mike Harmon? At the line of scrimmage, right?
Line of scrimmage.
That doesn't make plays in pass defense.
You know what, though? A big play is a big play. And
sure.
Just because it puts egg on your face. I mean, because I'm going to tweet him right now. Hey, Prez, Jason Smith says, nice play.
Yeah. He's going to block you, too. He's going to say, Prez, you can't
look,
can't see
I'm
his
blocked
tweets.
By several people that I have no idea why I've been blocked by them. And that's fine. You like me, you hate me.
As long as you're not
indifferent at Swollen Dome, I don't really care.
Give me one person who's blocked you that you don't know why they blocked you. I'll tell you.
We'll talk about that off air.
No, give me one person. Just give me one person.
Well, no, it's not. It's more media people.
So media people. Oh, I thought you meant athletes.
No, not athletes. Look, I'm not even blocked by the Carr family yet, even though I've said some terrible things disparaging the careers and efforts of both David and Derek during my media career. No, it's weird media beef that doesn't make much sense.
Oh, okay. Media beef.
Mike, what did I say? I didn't say anything against you, but, you know, maybe I said something against a team or executive that you're tight with. I don't know. Maybe that's the case.
John Schneider is really upset at Mike Harmon. Except
yes.
I kept tweeting at the guy, and he kept sending me back pictures of the General Lee. And I don't know what then I realized, it's not John Schneider of the Seahawks. I'm tweeting at John Schneider from Dukes of Hazzard. Oh, I ruined it. But, hey, can you introduce me to Tom Wopat? I always thought he was the cool one. I liked Luke Duke. The one thing to take away from this now, right? Another reason why I feel good about the Seahawks, right? I feel better about I almost feel like after the Seahawks win tonight, I feel like I do, like a lot of people do after they buy a new car, right? You buy a new car and you feel really good because you like the car. You knew you had to get a new one and you just feel good about it. You want to feel good about your purchase. You don't want to go buy a car and go, oh, why did I buy this? I hate this car and I'm driving it now for the next, you know, however many years. Like I'm driving this car for the next 5 or 6 years. I can't stand that. Why did I do this? I got talked into this. You want to feel good about driving it. Now, granted, you made the decision. It's your own fault when you buy a car. No one forced you to it. You know, just because the sales manager, you know, said, oh, we'll do some things for you. I'll throw in a potted plant. Go ahead, do that. All right, great. You know, it's still you know you wind up signing the lease or signing for the car. But you want to feel good. Now, I feel good after seeing the defense play well tonight. I feel good about the Seahawks being able to run the football. But what I feel really good about, and is something that I've always been tried and true, and I default to this, is I always feel good when the schedule is in your favor. Just like in the Hunger Games, may the odds be ever in your favor. The next 4 weeks for the Seattle Seahawks are as follows. The Eagles, the Giants, the Jets, Washington.
At least two of those teams can play defense, at least.
Yeah, but all those teams can't score. So
correct.
There is that.
Hey, I was giving them credit for the half the game. It's the second part. That's the problem.
No, sure. And look, in the Seahawks defense is usually really bad. Maybe Darnold could throw for 450. You know, if he ever comes off the injured list and winds up playing. But that 7-3 for the Seahawks is going to turn into 11-3 pretty quickly. I mean, it's going to go really fast. And then they close with the Rams and the 49ers. Let's say they split those two. You're still talking about a 12-4 Seahawks team that is going to be in the running for the number one overall seed in the NFC playoffs. They'll be right there at the end. I mean, they should finish 12-4 at worst. If they don't finish 12-4, that's a disappointment for Seattle right now.
Well, and you bring up the Rams. We're going to have to wait and see what they look like with no Whitworth on that offensive line. That's another piece to this, you know, ever-expanding injury puzzle of the NFC West that we'll have to monitor. Considering that offense, the overall numbers are strong, but week to week you're just watching them going, how do they put up those points? It's not explosive. It's not captivating. You know, there's no Hail Murrays mixed in there. I probably owe someone $7 for that.
You can't just say that and not do it. Michael Buffer.
Well, I don't know who owns the copyright to it. I don't know. I'm assuming somebody filed.
But maybe they did. And if they did, you owe them a lot of cash.
And if no, I would owe them $7. But if they didn't, then I will look into filing myself.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
We just watched a thriller. The Seahawks, a defensive stand at the end of the game. I know. You're thinking, don't lie to me. You're fake news. No. The Seahawks, a defensive stand at the end of the game. They sack Kyler Murray on 4th and 10, and they win it 28-21. They improved to 7-3. And now the Seahawks, who I picked to go to the Super Bowl before the season started, I feel a little bit better about them. But how does Jay Glazer feel? NFL on Fox insider extraordinaire joins us now on the hotline. Jay, what's happening, buddy?
Oh, what's going on, man? Hey, not only did they get a sack on 4th down over there, it was only with a 3-man rush.
Who knew Carlos Dunlap was going to be the one guy to turn the Seahawks defense from being all-time awful into, hey, now they can make some plays?
And look, you know, John Schneider, the general manager over there with the Seahawks, he has always done such a good job kind of taking up, you know, taking from others to help build up their own team. Some of the trades he's done with, obviously, Jamal Adams, and now with Carlos Dunlap here. And Carlos is, you know, causing such an issue with the Bengals. A lot of people were shying away, and they were like, nope. John Schneider's like, nope, need him here. Need to help out our pass rush. Got to help that defensive side of the ball. And it's, you know, him and Pete Carroll just made such a good team for so long.
Played well last week as well. Jamal Adams made a big play today to help in a possession that helped force a safety. And they were able to stop the run. Nobody had stopped the run of Arizona. And Kyler Murray finishes with 15 yards and got pounded.
And by the way, also, this is without, Seattle missing their top three cornerbacks.
Right.
So they're a banged-up team. And also, on the other side, too, they're down like their fourth center. And I mean, they're just so banged up. You know, in that division, 49ers obviously really banged up. This team has been really banged up, and they just keep fighting through and fighting through. And I thought when they asked me on the pregame show tonight, how many total yards between the two quarterbacks, I'm thinking, man, Kyler Murray and Hopkins, and the fact that Seattle's without their three best cornerbacks and didn't know what kind of pass rush they can get, I picked 800 yards. I'm like, both these quarterbacks are going to have 400 yards each. And I was, way short of that, but that's just goes to show you the job that they did defensively, being down that personnel and still being able to contain Kyler Murray and the Cardinals and that run game as well, like you just talked about. Unreal.
Yeah, I mean, look, the Cardinals, that's the thing, is they are so dangerous. They can beat anybody any week now. Even though they lost tonight, it doesn't matter. I mean, it's a toss-up game every week for them, which is a great thing because they can beat anybody in the NFL.
Yeah, and they're must-watch TV, right? No matter what. Yeah. Look what happened last week. Look what happened tonight. Last week on it, obviously it was it's such a prayer of a play. And, I said also earlier, I was talking to DeAndre Hopkins this morning, that play last week, he actually lost it in the lights after Kyler Murray threw it and then regained it, and had to go up obviously around, among three guys. It's, but they are must-see TV with not just Kyler Murray. I love what they did on that side of the ball, the defensive side of the ball tonight too. Vance Joseph using Isaiah Simmons and maybe five or six different roles and positions tonight. Their first round pick and Buda Baker, he's must see TV also. So I just think the Cardinals, from what they were a year ago and 2 years ago to what they are now, is what a transformation.
Yeah, you talk about Simmons, a guy who early in the season trying to work him in, get him some snaps, and now making a difference. Must-see TV this weekend, though, Jay.
At nickel, at linebacker, everywhere.
Yeah, must-see TV this weekend down in New Orleans. We got the second opinion on Drew Brees, going to miss a few weeks. So Jameis Winston back to the forefront against an Atlanta team that showed some signs of life. All of a sudden, we got a game in the NFC South that has a lot of juice as well.
Yeah, look, and Sean Payton, when he signed Jameis Winston, loved him. And some of it is me thinking about Sean just wanting to show the other offensive coaches who were with him, look what you couldn't do, look what I can do. But he has, since he's got him in there, he has been so impressed with him. And, I think having him in there, look, obviously Drew Brees is, you want Drew in. But does this open things up where they can throw the deep ball a lot more now and kind of open it up a little bit underneath because they, teams have to worry about them throwing deep. You don't have to worry about it when Drew's in there.
Right. Yeah. So those speedsters
and
suddenly
still
get back.
By the way, they're going to use a lot of Taysom Hill also. And, it's funny how Sean goes back and forth because first last year when Drew went down, he's like, I'm going to put Teddy in, but I'm telling you, this Taysom Hill, he's our star, he's our future. And then you saw what Lamar Jackson did last year, and Sean's little evil genius wheels start turning like, ooh, what can I do? I could see what Lamar Jackson done. I could, put in a Taysom Hill, what I could do with him. Loved him. And it was like, he's our guy. And that's why they paid him so much in the offseason. They paid him, a huge sum for a backup quarterback this offseason. But then all of a sudden he got his hands on Jameis Winston. He's like, oh, my gosh. Well, I love this guy now, too. I really love this guy. He's just like, he can't help himself.
Jay, any way that – look, I looked at the division's probably going to be something like Jameis gets 70% of the snaps. Taysom Hill will get 30%. He'll get drives now and again. Let's say the offense starts really humming and it works with Jameis. Jameis doesn't throw a pick every five plays. And it works with Jameis and it works with Taysom Hill, and it takes Brees a while to come back. Is there any scenario in which Drew Brees comes back and his job is not there for him?
No, I don't see Drew in that. Sean doing that to Drew is – what I think will be his last season. I don't see that happening. No.
Get back.
I don't see it happening. But look, for them to say Drew's going to only miss 2 weeks with, five injured ribs and punctured lungs, and I don't know if 2 weeks is really how viable that really is.
I could almost see your face there, Jay, as Jason asked that question, wow, there it is. The weight of that question, given what we've watched from Drew Brees for 2 decades.
Here's the thing: when Drew was really struggling earlier this year, I was wondering and talking. It's not just Sean I talked to. I talked to a ton of people in that organization, and we were in there for 6 weeks training them in MMA a couple of years ago. So I talked to a ton of people in there, and it was I even asked that question. Yeah, you think eventually, like, would Sean ever do that? Oh, no. And then just with Sean, too. Like, he would never, in Drew's last year, even as much as he was struggling, he was going to ride and die with him.
All right, Jay. Now, it feels like every week we have to ask you this question, but I feel like every week things are either great or they're not. So this is a great week for Bruce Arians in Tampa, because every week Tampa's either they're at the top and they're going to win the Super Bowl, or, I don't know if this is going to work.
Up. I know they won this week, but you got to hear them this weekend when they're playing. So they're going to go to Charlotte, and all of a sudden they come on and say, well, they're sitting in the plane. Well, there's a mechanical difficulty, and then they come back and say, well, it's a computer issue. But they were sitting there for like 5 hours. They finally let them off, but they put them in a tarmac away from the other part of the airport and just sat them in a tarmac for another hour and a half, however long it was, 2 hours. And they just sat there, and they got pizza delivered in. Man, if you could have heard the anger. If they – luckily, there are metal detectors, obviously, going through to airports. Because if he had carried a weapon on him, there were some people shot that day. He was so angry. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, man.
The angry, red-faced Bruce Arians.
But, yeah, he's – I think that game – look, I do think the Saints have their number, but I think that was just a that was just an aberration that game. Like, they ran it five times or four times. It's just not. It was just such an imperfect storm for them. I do think that the Saints have their number.
You can follow him on Twitter at Jay Glazer. That is at Jay Glazer. Also, vetsandplayers.org. Check everything out there. All the great stuff you're doing, Jay, as always, buddy. Appreciate it, man. Thanks, we'll talk to you next week. Enjoy the games.
See you guys.
See you, buddy.
Great stuff there from Jay Glazer. I can imagine talking to Bruce Arians every week is like, okay, is he going to be happy? Is he going to be sad? Is he going to be mad? Is he going to be – because it must just be so entertaining, because every week it's either Tampa Bay is great and things are great and they're the best team in the NFC and here they go, or it's, oh, this isn't going to work with Brady and look what happens and all that. It's either Lady or the Tiger, and I can't imagine how Bruce Arians is trying to live with this every single week, saying, I got to keep guys on an even keel, man. You can't be Lady. You can't be everything is a Super Bowl or you're 0-16 every week. You got to be able to ride that, keep that emotion at a decent level if you're going to go throughout the whole season.
Yeah, that's the big thing, though, is I wonder if, how much of that internally isn't there, and it's more just the media hype creation, and then he gets sucked into reacting to it. right? So there's a little bit to that. But as a, you know, the offensive guru putting up the whiteboard, you're trying to make sure everybody's getting fed, right? You're also worried about your run game and make sure that's going. Busted off a 98-yard run is certainly going to help things, like Ronald Jones did this past week. But, you know, making sure Evans gets his. Tough matchup this week. He's almost benchable here. But we look at, you know, Arians, ride the lightning, baby. You know, that's what we wanted to see when he went down to Tampa and teamed up with Brady. And there's going to be a hell of a book that comes out of this.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific.
Today in the NBA, a story that shocked everyone. We heard a little bit about it a day ago, and then it was confirmed today after Klay Thompson working out, playing basketball here in Southern California, went down hard on his leg and didn't like the feeling. It looked like it was going to be a serious injury to his right leg. We didn't know what it was about. Of course, Klay Thompson coming back after tearing the ACL in his left leg in the playoffs 2 years ago. Now he is going to be out all season with a tear to his right Achilles. Klay Thompson will miss the entire 2020-2021 season. And obviously, best wishes to Klay Thompson. He's one of the class acts in sports. You can't find anybody to say a bad thing about the guy. He's well-respected. Look, part of that great culture that they have in Golden State with him and Steph Curry, it's really just a terrific, it's one of those once-in-a-lifetime moments we have in Golden State. But the thing today, to the basketball thing that I think people are missing out on, is that one of the most popular things, Mike, that I saw people say was, man, I was so looking forward to Steph and Klay trying to take it from the Lakers this year or the Clippers, whoever it is. Oh, now that's out the window. And I wanted to stop and go, did you still really think the Warriors are great? I mean, you thought that Steph and Klay were going to come back and beat the Lakers? Or beat the Clippers, or beat the Nuggets, or beat the Jazz? You really think that was going to happen? I mean, the era of the Warriors was already over. I mean, we saw it. It was there. It was great. It was an incredible run for 5 years. It was Kevin Durant and back-to-back Finals MVPs. It's beating the Cavaliers almost every year. I mean, it was as close to a dynasty as you were going to get, but I don't know what people thought like that was still going to happen. The Warriors are a team where your best players are over 30. Draymond Green is not nearly the player he was 2 years ago. You'd have Klay Thompson coming back from a serious injury. And as we saw last year, when it was just Steph Curry trying to get things done, they were headed to the bottom of the standings. I mean, the era of the Warriors was over even before Klay Thompson got hurt. They needed to be able to say, hey, we're adding another super-duper star to this rotation. That's why they had to go out and get James Harden. You know, if they could add a superstar, then I could say, okay, now the Warriors are back. All right, now they have to add an absolute superstar to think they were going to compete. Because just Klay coming back and having a great – I mean, the Warriors, they look like the Blazers. I mean, that's what it would be. They'd be like a hyped-up version of the Blazers. They'd have a tough time cracking the top four in the Western Conference even before Klay Thompson got hurt. I mean, really, that's where they're at right now. That era ended, and it was now, can they restart it with somebody else? And now it's going to be more difficult. But that they need another superstar to get back to where they were, and I don't see that superstar coming.
Well, and I think that was the biggest point before the draft, right, going back about a week's time, there were just some whispers that maybe the Warriors would be looking at adding on James Harden, which was intriguing, right? My eyebrows raised up, my interest has peaked. Tell me more. How do you make this work? And et cetera. I think just from even after the announcement last night and the assumption that we were talking about a devastating injury and news that started leaking out, Chris Haynes, we talked about it on air, Dan Beyer and I, while you were off. And, you know, he more or less said, yeah, this is where we're at. This is what it may be believed that it was believed to be. So when the draft number two came up, it's like, all right, what do we got? Right. You'd had about 2 hours. Do they suddenly go away from the plan and try to trade away whatever assets they needed to bring Harden aboard? Instead, they drafted James Wiseman, and the plan continues. But I think from the straight basketball perspective, with Klay coming back and the excitement that you speak of. It was more just a, what can they be if both these guys are healthy, right? It, not necessarily that they were going to be juggernauts, but they were going to certainly be better than the putrid performance that we saw before Operation Shutdown happened. And good on Draymond for the broadcasting that he did once they were done. I mean, that was great. But I think it was just the curiosity of what could they be coming off of serious injuries. And as much as everybody got tired of the Warriors and hated the Warriors, when you got to the playoffs and the bubble, you missed the Warriors. So it was a little bit of quick nostalgia of how do we get them back?
I don't know that we can. You know, and it's look, all dynasties end, and they end in weird ways, and we really watch in retrospect, because now there's time to put between where we're at and how we can put a big moment in perspective. And when you watch the injuries of here's KD that goes down with the Achilles, and then here's Clay that goes down with the torn ACL in the finals, and it's okay, that really was the end, because they were never the same since then. And when you lose one of the best players on the planet, one of the top three players in the league, that's a big loss. That's not suddenly where, hey, we're just going to rally the troops and everything's going to be great the next season. You know, it's like, we'll get D'Angelo Russell and things are going to be. No. You needed all of those guys to get there. And now everybody is older. It's been a great run. It's been awesome. But this run had already ended. And like I said, if they get a superstar, that's going to be the big thing. Okay, if they could go get a superstar, that would help them continue this. But now with an over 30 Steph Curry, and a Klay Thompson that you don't know how he's going to come back when he does come back. Draymond Green is not clearly the same player. Who's going to go do that and say, I can slide right in here? I mean, KD, it was easy. We got all these. This is great. I'm going to show up there 4 years. Everybody late 20s. But we're great. Yeah, we're going, man. Draymond Green is one of the best all-around players in the NBA. I'm going. And it was hot knife through butter. And they looked phenomenal. It was going to be another championship. And now this is where we're at, because this is the state of the Warriors. I don't know that they're going to suddenly get somebody to go, I want to go there and play in that culture. You know, that's something that is really going to be difficult to sell to a star like James Harden now. More on Klay Thompson and the injury and how this impacts the Warriors, right? So we spent the last few minutes talking about the Warriors not knowing what they are, and really the dynasty had ended before Klay Thompson got hurt. Where do things sit now? I don't think the question no longer is, hey, who's going to come play in Golden State? The biggest question is, at what point does Steph Curry think, I might have to go someplace else if I want to win another championship?
Boom!
All right, he's the forever, I know, KNBR, I'm ready for my interview. He's the forever warrior, right? He's the guy, he's going to stay with his team all the way to the end. I get it. In the NBA, everybody leaves. Everybody leaves at some point. LeBron left his hometown twice to go win a championship. And it would be like that second time where, boy, Steph is a forever warrior, right? And no matter what he does in his career, Golden State's always going to be home. It's always going to be where he comes back and loved by the fans. But at some point, and it may come after this season, he's got to go, maybe I need to go someplace else. Nobody else is coming here because now I'm over 30. I'm not the drawing card. I got to be the guy that go teams up somewhere. And maybe Steph Curry goes to form a new super team somewhere else, either in the West, he goes to wherever it is. But I would put my money more on him leaving than them getting another star. Because at some point, is he just going to sit there and take jumpers and put up empty stats for 5, 6, 7 years? He's not that guy. He wants to win. And he wants to go and say, okay, these early things, I could still do it. I can eventually be a finals MVP at some point. I don't need Kevin Durant to show up and win championships. I can go team up with somebody and you watch what we do. And suddenly now my championships are at 5 and 6. I wonder the chances are of that happening, and I would say they're pretty good. Because like I said, everybody leaves. I would say 70% that at some point Steph Curry would leave and go play someplace else to play the end of his prime like LeBron did with the Lakers.
Everybody leaves and everybody hurts. And I was with you until you said 5 or 6 championships, because I was ready to say, send him to New York. Revitalize Knicks basketball. Let him go work with Obi Toppin. Be a good two-man act.
Hey, it might work with the Knicks. It's okay. I mean, look, I hope that you know, well, boy, I'll tell you, we'll have Gordon Hayward. We're going to have him. We're going to have, yeah, I mean, I hope he can fit in. You know, we have the over 30 All-Stars, which I guess would be okay. But no, but I mean, but still, it's that's got to be what he thinks of, because if you want to win and you can't get everybody to come play with you, you got to go someplace else. And if he would ruin his reputation, I get it. He would probably stay there, but he will go if he has to. You know what? This is fun. I want to go play here where I've decided to go do this, and who knows? And you're going to see the Photoshop jerseys everywhere. Steph leaving. You think it's not going to happen? It'll happen.
I think it's a curiosity. I mean, it's the idea of what's most important to him, because he's already got the chips, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right? He's already ridden on the ship a couple of times. So is it more important to him for the legacy of being one of the old throwback guys that stays with one team while also being a guy that helped change how the NBA is played? Because he gets to have both of those if he stays a Warrior in San Francisco for the duration.